Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome you this morning to our early morning podcast here on Saturday morning here in Chicago. I'd like to introduce to you Mr. David Deering. He is one of the founders of a leading, one of the top edge companies here in the Texas area. They're in Fort Worth, Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio. His name is David Deering. David, thank you for joining us on this podcast this morning.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Let's go ahead and let's do a deep dive on your background here. We did some background snooping on you. We didn't do a background check or anything. We kind of checked out your LinkedIn profile. We checked out your website and did some more Google searching. You've been in cyber for a long time, or you've been doing IT and like sales related stuff in IT for quite a while. Could you please tell us more about your background and kind of how you got started with cybersecurity and kind of how you ventured in that area?
Absolutely. I started cyber before it was called cyber. It was just called information security. Due to the dot-com crash and 9/11, I was looking for a job, and I ended up getting a job with McAfee. McAfee had a significant sales organization located in Dallas, Texas. They still do. And got started, by Providence, and ended up working at McAfee, ended up working at multiple other cybersecurity vendors. As the market matured and as the threat landscape and the severity of attacks continued to increase and grow, I continue to grow with the industry, and it's been an interesting time. It's been interesting to see what occurred from the very early days, all the way back to 2001, to, what we're dealing with today. So it's been a very long and interesting ride.
Yeah, for sure. I think everybody this year with the COVID stuff, and we'll get to that later on the show, it's really been an interesting ride, I think, for every business, just about in every industry. So now tell us how you ventured into Leo Cybersecurity. It sounds like you started this in 2016. It's been growing very quickly with over 3,000% growth rate. What is the foundation or what motivated you to start Leo Cybersecurity?
Good question. Primarily, there were two drivers, me and my co-founder, David Tompkins. David Tompkins, he's very similar background. He has actually more cybersecurity sales experience than I do. He had been doing it since 1999, and he also was one of the very early employees at a vendor called FireEye. FireEye is probably the most innovative, leading-edge, advanced cybersecurity company in the world. They've very involved with some of the most significant breaches in human history, and he was on the forefront of all that. And his time at FireEye was winding down. He went there to build it, did really well. The business did well, and he was looking to do something, his next startup. We're both startup guys. I've been with one company that's been public, two that were acquired. The two that were acquired were both acquired for over $500 million by both, by Cisco Systems. And then his business, FireEye, went public. So we're startup guys, and both in North Texas. And we started talking. OpenDNS, the business that I had worked at, had just been acquired by Cisco Systems. I was working for another startup in Austin, Texas. And we started talking. And the one common theme that we experienced is that most business struggled mightily to build cybersecurity programs, right? We had been selling into Exxon, Chevron, Shell, USAA, which is essentially the bank for the military. And we had seen very effective programs. We'd been partnering with those organizations that were leading edge organizations. And we saw what indicated strong programs. But generally speaking, most businesses, in particular, mid-market businesses or smaller businesses, 1,000 to 500 person businesses, struggled mightily to build cybersecurity programs. And so we created a business around that opportunity that we saw and created a business that we believe is innovative, and we're able to provide immature cyber organizations or organizations with immature cybersecurity programs, basically an easy button to executives to provide them world-class advanced cybersecurity in an affordable, efficient manner.
Interesting. Sounds excellent. Sounds like you got a really good story there. Now, one thing ever since we first met on the phone, David, I've always had a burning question for you, and I've always been kind of pondering about this, so I thought I would save it for the show. Leo is an interesting name. How did you get the name Leo Cybersecurity? What's the meaning behind that?
So one of the problems that we see in the cybersecurity market is it's a vendor-driven market. And what I mean by that is Silicon Valley is their world-class innovators, and they follow macro trends very well, and cybersecurity heated up, and Silicon Valley heated up around cybersecurity, right? So there's a ton of money that went into building cybersecurity products, and that's great. Cybersecurity products are one of the three key components to build an effective cybersecurity program. And the contributing factor why we think it's a vendor-driven market is that, generally speaking, business executives are aware that cybersecurity is a very significant problem. What they do to solve it is they give money to someone, and that's generally in the form of CapEx. And that CapEx dollars are utilized to, buy technology products. And Silicon Valley chases that CapEx, and they're very smart to do so. However, that generates a problem in the fact that you get what we call tool-heavy organizations, and we can talk more about that. But essentially, our thesis and our theme is that there is no playbook for cybersecurity, right? There's no easy solution. It's not going to be solved in my lifetime, and probably will never be solved. It will be a continual problem. The internet wasn't built with security in mind. So the second contributing factor is that the biggest spend for cybersecurity consultancies is with the Big Four. The Big Four accounting firms, the audit and compliance firms. And we believe they're a contributing factor in why you see such significant breaches. So lack of playbook and some of the other contributing factors, compliance-focused spend versus operational spend. So what we believe is that it takes creativity and expertise to, work with businesses because there's not a templatized approach to build cybersecurity. So Leo is simply a derivation of Leonardo da Vinci, one of the most creative scientific minds in the world. And so we named it after Leonardo da Vinci, Leo Cybersecurity.
Wow. That's very interesting. It's very excellent. Thank you. Now your company, who is your customer base? Like whom are you trying to target? Is it the small, medium sized businesses, the Fortune 500, or a combination of both?
It's really, we can support a customer of any size. Now, generally speaking, smaller businesses, the 500 to 1,000 to maybe 1,500 person company is going to be a better fit with us because Exxon, Chevron, USAA, they don't need our help. They build and run very solid, advanced cybersecurity programs. The one thing we're looking for in our customers is businesses that are immature from a cybersecurity standpoint. So that's our primary indicator of a good fit for us. Businesses that know they need a cybersecurity program, know that they don't want to do it themselves because it's very difficult it's time consuming and it's expensive. Can either do it themselves or hire Leo, and we take care of anything. Like I said earlier, we're an easy button. They hire one person, one organization, one purchase order, one contract, and we run the entire program for them. And that's including people, the leadership piece, right? We assign our customers executive leadership and governance. We supply them with a chief information security officer. We do the day-to-day security operations, what's referred to as SecOps, which is detection, prevention, architecture, incident management, incident response. We do risk management, compliance and audits, and business enablement, which is simply we align the cybersecurity program and department to the business, whether it's what the legal department needs, HR needs, IT needs, the executives need. And so it's really, we can support a customer of any size. Our customers are immature from a cybersecurity standpoint, but we do business with a Fortune 10 company all the way down to businesses with 100 employees.
Okay. Now, are you mostly local to Texas, or are you nationwide? Do you have a global presence also?
Mm-hmm. We've done business internationally. It's not our core sweet spot. We do business across the United States, from the East Coast to the West Coast. Support customers in, you know, the Northeast, the Mid-Atlantic, Texas, California, Midwest. We can support customers anywhere in the United States.
Okay. Now let's do a deeper dive in this easy button thing you just talked about. Now talk in more detail, if you can, please, about how you make cyber easy for the business executives, like the leaders, and even the IT security staff. Now you mentioned you're kind of like a one-stop shop, right, for a customer. But in what other areas do you make cybersecurity easy for your customers?
Well, so the easiest way to explain it is kind of ask a tongue-in-cheek rhetorical question. When was the last time you hired someone and paid them a bunch of money to do something that they've never done before?
Hmm.
So you don't do never. That because it's not a wise decision.
Right.
However, me and my co-founder, David Tompkins, the one thing that we saw as a common theme was businesses, because there's currently a million unfilled cyber jobs in the United States. It's just too new, and it's like getting a Harvard-trained doctor. It's very, very difficult to become good at cybersecurity. So there's not a lot of people to go around. So businesses generally, if they want to build a program, they hire someone internally. They promote someone internally, and usually it's a technical person. And that technical person, and I've sat across the table from them my entire life, they've just been given a bunch of responsibility to do something that they've never done before, and it's very, very difficult. Okay, so it's a long answer, but let's assume you take that approach and you hire Johnny, who's a very trusted, great, solid employee, and you ask him to build a cybersecurity program, and he's never done it before. All right, so I would argue that that's not a wise way to go about doing anything. However, they're forced to do it because there weren't other options. There wasn't a Leo that they could call. So what's the first thing he does is he goes and hires a consultant. And usually that consultant is going to be someone that probably never built a cybersecurity program, but is telling them they know how. And then they go through the process of, you know, writing out a document that lays out a strategy that delivers headcount and talks about tools. So then as an organization, you're doing something that you've never done before again. You're going out and trying to hire cybersecurity people that are very difficult to find. So you're tasking your HR department to do something that they've never done before, right? So then let's assume you find some people. How do you vet them? How does an IT technical expert vet a cybersecurity person? He doesn't even know how to do it himself. So as you can see, it's a cascading effect. It's very, very difficult. So what we did was we went out and hired the best and the brightest, the guys that built Exxon's programs, the guy that built programs for large multinational oil and gas companies, that built programs for Walter Reed Medical Center, that built programs for the U.S. Army. So we went out and found the, what we call pioneering operators, and built our business around them. So when our customers hire us, they're getting a chief information security officer that's extremely technical, been involved in cybersecurity for 10, 15, 20 years, working at some of the largest organizations that are targeted by the Chinese and Russians every day. ExxonMobil is one of the most targeted organizations in the world. So they get a team of very experienced operators overnight. So they hire one person. We bring everything to bear. They outsource the entire function to us, and they're putting it in the hands of, you know, guys that have gray hair and, you know, a lot of cybersecurity experience, and we give them ease of mind and expertise that they otherwise couldn't afford or access. You know, most of these guys make, you know, $200,000+ a year, and most of our customers only spend $150,000-$200,000 a year on their entire program.
Okay. So basically another term to use for your services is basically cybersecurity as a service, right?
Mm-hmm. Cybersecurity as an umbrella. Outsourcing, right? Yeah, exactly. We call it cyber as a service because it aligns with the business. But, you know, a lot of businesses, including Leo, we outsource our HR, our payroll, our accounting. We outsource our email to Google. We outsource a variety of different functions to a variety of different partners that are experts at it. Businesses hire us. They basically outsource the entire function to us, and we provide them the people, the process, and the technology to ensure that our customers are protected to the maximum extent possible.
Well, that's a very unique business model. As I mentioned, I've been doing podcasting for quite a number of years, and I think this is one of the first few instances where I've actually approached the cybersecurity, you know, companies like yourself, that they offer kind of like this one-stop shop, you know, for people, because I know that cybersecurity, you know, worker shortage, you know, people are scrambling to find workers, and that's a catch-22. So obviously, you know, you're going to be the prime choice for them to come out with those seasoned, you know, executives or those seasoned professionals. Sounds like a really excellent business model. Now, one more thing I want to ask you. I've been hearing that the Texas market overall, now I've never been in Texas. I've been wanting to go down there. I'm planning to come down there next summer, actually, is really like the hotbed growth of technology, especially for cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, machine learning. In a lot of ways, I think people are likening the Texas market, especially Austin area, kind of like the next Silicon Valley. Can you tell us more about that? I mean, are you experiencing the same thing? I mean, can you validate that thinking? Because, I mean, obviously you're in Texas, so what's your first-hand experience into that?
Texas is a very large state geographically, and we've got two of the largest MSAs in the country, Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston, and Houston's probably the leading, you know, energy town in the world. So there's four prime, in regards to cybersecurity, absolutely. In regards to competing against the Silicon Valley, maybe that might be a stretch. But in regards to cybersecurity, I would say Texas is a leading state for one primary reason. There's four major areas of cybersecurity in the United States. There's the city, New York City. There's Mid-Atlantic because of the Fed. There's Silicon Valley because of the tech. And then oil and gas in Houston and North Texas. Now, the Russians and the Chinese are voracious to understand not only the business operations, but, you know, fracking, everything related to oil and gas. They're attempting to continue, they continually attempt to steal and do steal a variety of things from these businesses. So because of that, and because Texas is a very conservative, capitalist-focused state, the majority of people that run oil and gas firms are capitalists and patriots. They spend a lot of money to protect their businesses. And therefore, you have a significant amount of innovators and very strong cybersecurity operators out of the state of Texas. And therefore, you know, you've got a lot of innovation and expertise. In addition to that, in North Texas is probably one of the largest mid-market cybersecurity sales forces in the world. You've got McAfee, Palo Alto, Fortinet, a lot of publicly traded cybersecurity vendors, sales leadership, and Salesforce are located in North Texas. And then you've got very hot cybersecurity startups such as Critical Start, that you know, I know the founders well, Rob and Tara Davis, that have built a world-class business. It just took in $50 million to grow their business. So from a cybersecurity standpoint, I would argue that Texas is one of the strongest cybersecurity markets in the world.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to come down there. So anyway.
Well, we love people coming from high-tax states like Illinois, so come on down.
Hey, believe me, I want to move down there. My wife doesn't want to come down. She wants to stay up here in Illinois, but I'm going to come down there. I'm tired of paying the high rents. Anyway, hopefully
that's the beauty about Texas. It is the value, your dollar goes a lot further, and you get to keep more of it.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. I'll probably be moving down there next year. But anyway, let's do a deeper dive into your solutions and your services line here. I'm at your website right now. I know we talk more about the management side of stuff. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the technical and the training side, especially hitting more on the training? Like, do you actually go out to companies and offer, like, a security awareness training program now that COVID-19 has hit us and it's never going to go away, obviously? And now, I think a lot of the companies now are starting to reopen their doors. Companies are starting to realize, well, hey, we got to really start to train our employees now when it comes to maintaining good cyber hygiene. What do you do in terms of training? Do you go on site and actually do this training, or do you hire someone to do that for you, or how does that whole thing work for you?
Well, we do everything for our customers as it relates to cybersecurity. Now, cybersecurity is very difficult, and it's a comprehensive process. So whether it's training, whether it's governance, whether it's risk, whether it's SecOps, which is daily security operations, a variety of things, we can do it all for our customers. So it's not just training. It's not just user awareness. It's not just SecOps. It's the comprehensive approach to cybersecurity, and we handle that we do it all for our customers. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not.
Well, what I meant to say was, like, you structure security training programs for your customers. Like, you actually come out and do, like, tailorized training programs, like mock phishing attacks, or do, like, you know, formal lecture kind of like PowerPoint presentations.
Yes, we do all of that. So depending upon our customers' maturity level, yes, we do it. Now, some customers don't need it. Some customers do. It's called user awareness. But we do what are called incident response preparedness and tabletops, which are basically, hey, something bad happened, an incident, and we've got to deploy our plan and execute against it. So that's called a tabletop. And we actually run real-world incidents or cyber incidents, which is just bad stuff happening. So, yes, we do it all for our customers.
Okay, excellent. Now, I'm at the Business Solutions tab of your website. Now, you do work in industrial control systems and critical infrastructure, I'm assuming, right? Because I know that critical infrastructure is going to be, has been, will be one of the big hot areas for the cyber attacker to hit into. So what do you do for your clients in terms of fortifying their lines of defense to protect against, like, water lines, gas, oil lines, power grids, that kind of thing?
Well, so there's really two different types of cybersecurity. There's IT cybersecurity, information technology cybersecurity, and that is protecting data, basically protecting your servers and workstations. And then there's industrial control systems. Industrial control systems are the critical infrastructure that power our nation, whether it's utility providers, whether it's storing gas, storing petroleum, moving fluids, water, gas, liquefied natural gas plants, whatever it might be, That is considered critical infrastructure. And that is a significant attack surface. And being in Texas, we built a practice that was focused around protecting critical infrastructure. It's done completely different than information technology. The interesting thing is that we haven't had any significant, and what I mean by significant is the lights not turning on or a nuclear reactor, you know, melting down because of an attack. We've had very significant attacks on businesses, Target, Sony, Experian, you go down the long list of publicly known breaches. Those were very significant. The CEO of Target got fired because of that breach.
Right.
It's my guess, there will be people that go to jail for the Experian breach, not because they got breached, but because they tried to cover it up and personally benefited financially from the knowledge of it. There have been very significant attacks in critical infrastructure, but not in this country, or at least not publicly known. I know a few that have occurred, but they're not really known publicly. But nothing kinetic has happened, meaning a pipeline hasn't blown up and a nuclear reactor hasn't melted down, because that would be considered an act of war. Even though we're constantly under attack from the Chinese and Russians, if and when something happens, along those lines, the United States would respond probably cyberly, but also with their military might. So it will happen sometime in my life. It hasn't happened yet, and businesses are preparing for it, but it is a significant attack surface.
Yeah, it seems like Texas is a lot more security proactive in terms of cyber, more so than Illinois is. Here, up here in the Midwestern states, we're still kind of behind the times. I think critical infrastructure is still something that people really have not given too much attention to. Right now, my perspective is that here in Illinois, we are still learning how to deal with the cyber threats, you know, and trying to combat that. But it sounds like you guys down there are like miles ahead compared to us up here in Illinois and other Midwestern states. That's great. Now, one more thing I want to ask you in this regard is in terms of your solutions, compliance. Now, you alluded to data privacy. Now, that's a big thing right now, right? There's the GDPR, you know, where companies can be penalized, up to 4% of their net profit, I think, if they don't come into compliance. You got the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, which is imposing huge penalties. I've done about two or three podcasts, actually, just on content surrounding that. Do you actually... now, you may have answered this before, forgive me if I'm asking again, but do you actually come out and you will do a risk assessment security audit to see if they are in compliance with these specific legislations?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question again?
Yeah, CCPA and the GDPR, you know, they're big hot button data privacy legislations. Right? Yeah,
uh-huh.
Do you actually go out to, like, company XYZ and say, hey, okay, we'll make sure that you're in compliance with these certain legislation mandates. Here, we'll do a security audit. You actually go out and do a deep dive and tell them where they need to improve and where their strengths are at, so they won't get fined or penalized, or even better yet, they won't even get audited.
Absolutely. As they outsource the entire program to us, we're responsible for making sure that they can meet and pass any audits. So, yes, we do SOC 2, GDPR, any sort of PCI. We manage their entire cybersecurity function. Usually that includes compliance with those types of regulations. So, yes, we do that for our customers.
Okay. Now, the CMMC is coming out. I think it's already been in talk, but I think the formal stuff, I think the regulations or whatever, it's coming out later this fall. And that's where the subcontractors and the contractors that do work with the DoD have to be certified to some degree. Are you going to be ramping up to help your customers, clients come into, help them achieve that level of certification to work with the DoD?
Nope, we don't focus on working with a few different verticals. We don't work with we don't work with governments, including education and or healthcare.
Okay, excellent. Now, you have this thing called a Leo platform, Leo technology stack. Can you go into that in a little bit more detail, please?
Mm-hmm. So there's three components to a cybersecurity program. There's people, there's program or processes, and then there's tools. So for us to support our customers, because they're very immature, we've built intellectual property that allows us to immediately do what is referred to as managed detection and response on their endpoints and networks. Essentially, it allows us, but majority of businesses are constantly being attacked. And so what we have to do is we have to be able to monitor their environments, meaning their servers, their networks, their workstations for malicious behavior. Cybersecurity is you put up walls or fences to try to keep them out, but you can't build a wall or a fence big enough to keep them out. The NSA, bad guys get inside the NSA, so bad guys will get in our customers. You cannot stop every attack. And the key to an effective cybersecurity program is once they do get in is to find them and get them out as quickly as possible. So it's seeing bad stuff and then making sure you stop them. It's called reducing dwell time. So we built technology that allows us to do that, to immediately improve our customer cybersecurity program with very advanced technology that they would never be able to know how to operate or afford. We've built that for our customers, deploy it, and then we support them remotely where we're constantly monitoring their environment for malicious behavior. And when the bad guys get in, we get them out as quickly as possible. So that's a basic description of our technology.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you have any customer success stories you'd like to share with us or any client testimonials?
Generally speaking, I don't share our customers publicly. It's just not something we do. We do have a very significant customer base that's very happy with our businesses, whether we've got a $500 million manufacturer here in North Texas that we've been doing business with 3 years. They paid us over $1 million. We work with the Fortune 10. We work with a variety of financial institutions that have, $500 million to $1 billion in assets. We support a lot of businesses that have a lot to protect. And most of the CEOs and CIOs, chief information officers that we work with, are actually references for us. So if we're trying to sell another customer, they're happy to jump on a call with us, with our prospective customers to talk about what we do, but we don't talk about them publicly.
Okay, excellent. Now, COVID-19, obviously nobody ever realized the full gravity of the situation. Everybody's doing finger pointing as to where it really started. I personally believe, and not to get political here, I think it started in China, the Wuhan province. There are two flip sides to this. It started as a laboratory experiment that went bad. Then there's the other side that hypothesizes, well, some people ate bats. They're in the meat market because the bats actually are a carrier of the COVID-19, and from there it spread like wildfire. But anyway, no matter how it did originate, it's obviously here in the U.S., and it's going to be with us for a very, very long time, like the flu. How has your business been impacted by COVID-19? How have your clients been impacted by COVID-19? And now this is going to be like a very, very broad question, but now how have you helped them with the security issues? Some of the big ones are the working from home, the remote access issues. There's a Zoom bombing, phishing emails, going to phony, fictitious websites, from the World Health Organization. So how have you been impacted? How has Texas faced up with this, and how have you helped your clients?
Very broad question. So with a lot of our customers are immature from a cyber standpoint, and some of them are immature from an IT standpoint. And what I mean by that is I've worked remotely almost my entire life, out of my house or just on the road. Some of our customers did not have laptops. So we had to work with our customers to help them provision secure laptops so that their employees could work remotely. That also, you know, ensured that we were, you know, spinning up the correct, you know, provisioning and VPNs and secure access. So we worked with our customers as a piece of our customers' business. Depending upon how they responded, we would respond to ensure that they were doing it securely. Texas has fared very well during the virus, even though we have, you know, like I said, two of the largest metropolitan statistical areas in the country. We're very spread out. We're not dense like city. It's a very large state, and we have very sprawling cities. So we, you know, by the grace of God, you know, we haven't been impacted dramatically like some of the other states that have been harder hit. Now, where it comes in from a cybersecurity standpoint, it's more the geopolitical issues and the saber rattling and, you know, it's you know, if we end up entering into a cold war with China, China is one of our biggest adversaries. There's a famous report issued by Mandiant that was, I forgot what it's called. I'll have to look it up here. It's about what's called APT 11, I think, if I'm correct. It was released. Team report. It was released years ago, and let's see here. When was it released? I think in 2013. It's called the APT 1 report. So China is very voracious. The Chinese Red Army is probably the Russians and the Chinese Red Army are two of our biggest attackers. So the Chinese are very good at it. They don't view it as stealing. They view it as outworking us. So they've stolen military secrets. They've stolen anything and everything that's not bolted down. So if we enter into a cold war with China, the attacks will increase dramatically. There's constant discussion about the level of attacks coming from China and Russia, and you know, private businesses as well as the government continually monitoring. There's one interesting thing that I know that occurred. I know it's a historical fact, but I don't necessarily know what happened. When Obama visited China, after that visit, the attacks from China decreased significantly. I don't know what was said. I don't know what was done. But either, you know, he went over and said, hey, look, you keep doing this, we're going to have to respond. Or it's highly likely he said, hey, look, we control significant pieces of your critical infrastructure, whether it's dams or utilities. We will shut them down if, you know, you don't stop attacking our country. I don't know. That's all speculation. All I know that is as tensions arise between the United States in other countries, the easiest way for those countries to attack us is via cyber. So I anticipate that the attack volume from our adversaries will continue to increase as we navigate these difficult and uncertain times.
Yeah. Well, it's not – I mean, and now this brings up my next question about the nation-state threat actors. It's not necessarily so much China and Russia, but there are also other adversaries in there, too. That's, for lack of a better term, there's Iran, there's the Middle East, Pakistan. These areas where they harbor some resistance against the United States, they're also launching cyber attacks. Now, they don't make the news headlines as much. I think Iran has made a little bit of news headlines. What are your thoughts on those geographic areas?
Well, Korea is responsible for attacking Sony. Sony was a very significant attack. Iran, not so much. They're so behind the times because they lack innovation, they lack capital, they lack anything and everything to be really significant from a cybersecurity standpoint. Don't worry about them as much. It's really China, Russia, Korea, are the three primary folks that are continuing to attack us. What's an interesting side note is that the United States was actually the biggest, was one of the most innovative and most significant kinetic cyber attacks in human history, and it was an attack against Iran. The United States, working probably with the Five Eyes, they attacked it was called Stuxnet.
Right.
Interesting read. I encourage you to read it. Yeah, Stuxnet, where we attacked a uranium enrichment plant and burned up their centrifuges. So I don't know this for certain, but this is speculation. I know the United States was involved with it, but by us and the Five Eyes created a virus that was deployed at their nuclear enrichment facility and burned up centrifuges, Iran's. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely heard about that. In fact, I think that happened about maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago. In fact, I was a copywriter for a company, and they outsourced our firm to do some copywriting on that and try to get leads from them based on that topic. So I did some writing on that, so I'm pretty familiar with that. Now, the COVID-19 stuff, how is Texas handling that right now? Are the return to work orders coming back? Are people dealing okay with the security issues? And have people like called you and said, hey, David, now we're going back to work. What do we need to do? You know, what do we, how do we better fortify ourselves and that kind of thing? Or
Texas is almost back to normal.
Oh, really?
I went to church the other day with probably 400 people in an auditorium. I went to a party yesterday to watch the Colonial Golf Tournament. There's still social distancing and a variety of other things. But by and large, like I said, Texas has not been impacted greatly by the grace of God. And so from a cyber standpoint, again, it depends upon our customer's posture, right? We're constantly on a day-to-day basis working with all of our customers, addressing their needs from a cybersecurity standpoint as their business, you know, changes from day to day. So nothing specific because we embed with our customers long term. But Texas is faring this very well. We are very pleased with the response of our governor and our mayors here in North Texas and the community to ensure that they're behaving in a manner that ensures that the virus does not spread.
Wow. Here in Illinois, David, we're still closed. We can't even get our church to open yet. Wow. I'm moving down there. Anyway. So cool. Anyway, so what? Just to kind of focus on Leo Cybersecurity once more, what are your general plans for expansion? Are you going to be offering new services, maybe perhaps some new products, maybe ramping up more people to serve more clients? What are your plans for expansion like this year going into next year, if you can share that with us?
We're a high growth startup. You know, we won an award last year and will be considered again this year for the fastest growing technology company in North Texas. So we grew 3,000%. Yeah, it was a fun, difficult ride. So we're a high growth startup. That's our entire focus. So we're just continuing to, you know, hopefully continue to support our customers in a manner that allows us to continue to grow our customer count, employees, and revenue as fast as possible.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations on that. Now, folks, segue over to the cybersecurity threat landscape in general. Now, there's some hot-button topics I usually ask all of my guests. So I'm going to ask you the same also. The Internet of Things. That's one topic. I find that to be a very scary proposition. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. I still drive a 2003 analog instrumentation Honda Civic. I've seen all these smart cars, and to me they're very scary. an example being here in Chicago, we have like very, very cold winters. By about a year and a half ago, we had our worst polar vortex where the temperature, wind chill was like minus 80 degrees. And luckily, my car started first time around. But there are other newer cars, like these smart cars, they couldn't even start because they had all this electronic gadgetry interconnected with one another. I find it to be a very scary proposition because from a cyber standpoint, it just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker. The lines of network communications are unencrypted. There's a lot of backdoors that can happen that are open. And plus, many of these vendors that offer IoT products, they don't even implement security into them anyway. And finally, when somebody actually does buy a product, like an IoT-based product, they just kind of leave it at the default settings. They don't change it to meet what's necessary for their environment. So what are your thoughts on IoT? I mean, do you have like a smart home or a smart car or anything like that? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think much about it. I'm not very advanced I'm not an early adopter of technology myself. So I think it's going to be a very significant issue though. You are correct that IoT manufacturers usually don't, let me step back. Most businesses that build products do not build with security in mind, whether it's healthcare companies, refrigerator companies, automakers. I mean, Toyota is actually, they just shut down their plants in Ohio and Turkey. It went offline on June 9th. I concur with you. I think as we continue to use IP to enable and automate our society, the attack surface will continue to increase and the bad guys will continue to figure out ways to do bad things.
Right. Okay, excellent. Now, C-suite, like the CIO and the CISO especially, now, there's always this issue, okay, a company XYZ has been hit with a cyber attack. The CISO's or the CIO's head needs to roll. I'm of the old school where I think you need to do a holistic forensics examination first to see who's really accountable, then cast blame, then hold them responsible. I don't think the CIO or the CISO should be necessarily terminated immediately, but that's what seems like everybody wants these days, is just let the CISO's head roll. I mean, obviously the buck stops with them. What are your thoughts on that? Have you had like your customers raise concerns about that, or what are your thoughts on that?
Is the question from a post breach standpoint, what should happen to the chief information security officer?
Like everybody wants
lack of. Go ahead.
Yeah, because it's a knee-jerk reaction, in my opinion. Okay, suppose, company XYZ has been hit with a major security breach. Okay, well, the CIO is responsible. Let's fire him. I don't believe in that approach. I believe that we need to do an exhaustive study, see what happened, where the attack precipitated, how it happened, and then cast blame. But it seems like in our society that the CIO or the CISO, CISO, they should be fired immediately no matter what, when they may not even have had the responsibility of it. Now, obviously, the buck stops at them, but what are your thoughts on that, on making them hold on to this huge degree of responsibility?
I haven't really thought about it. Depending upon, there's two reasons that businesses are going to hire a chief information security officer. The first reason is they want the chief information security officer to make them secure. The second reason they hire someone is to say that they have someone so that if something bad happens, they can point the finger at them and fire them. I've seen that in multiple instances where a business that's required to have PCI compliance simply gives someone the title of chief information security officer in the business. They've got no experience. But PCI requires that they have a leader, so they assign someone. That person is a scapegoat and ultimately would get fired because the business just simply gave them the title. If a business wants to hire someone and they hire someone and make them chief information security officer and they're genuinely serious about building a secure business, that's a pretty esoteric question, because you'd have to determine, was there negligence, and did the chief information security officer do a poor job, and therefore he or she should be fired? Then yeah, they should be fired. No one can sell no breach, meaning, hey, you hire me or you hire Leo and nothing bad's going to happen. That's not possible. So I don't know how to answer the question. It's so situational and esoteric that it would have to require significant due diligence on my part to determine if someone needed to be, their employment needed to be terminated.
Sure, fair enough. Now, another hot button topic I want to ask you about is artificial intelligence. I'm actually writing a book right now on AI and cybersecurity. In fact, I've got a contributor. He's from Spark Cognition. They're one of the leading AI companies down in Austin.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard of them. You heard of them? Okay.
Spark
Cognition. I'm actually a reseller. Yeah, I've got one of their big name engineering people actually co-authoring the book with me. I'm actually a reseller for them too on their AI side. Now, AI it's a big buzzword right now, in my opinion. I think people just don't really understand it in cyber, but it's being used in two areas. One, for like automation and threat hunting and pen testing. And two, it's being used to filter out for the false positives so that the IT security team can only get the real and legitimate threats that they can triage. Has Leo Cybersecurity done any work in artificial intelligence, machine learning, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we do light ML, I think. Whatever NLP is, natural language processing. I don't know. I forgot if that's AI or ML. I'm not an expert in
that's
it.
That's what it is.
But yes, we do NLP, and I'm sure our engineers use a variety of different AI and ML techniques to help protect our customers. But I'm not technical, and I stay out of there. Swim lane. So, but I do know that we use NLP, whichever version that is, to help us with our technology and secure our customers.
Okay, excellent. Now, another big hot button topic, David, is cyber insurance policies. Here in Illinois, a lot of SMBs are starting to jump on the bandwagon. Ooh, I need to get a cyber insurance policy and I'll be protected. But just like our healthcare industry, it's really messed up, and I think a lot of SMBs, even larger businesses, they're just think that just because if they've been hit by a cyber breach, they can file a claim and they'll get the entire payout. But in probably 80% of the cases, that's not going to happen. Have you dealt with cybersecurity insurance, and have your clients have asked you for advice on that? Do you offer services in those areas too, also? Here, I mean, you may not be like an insurance broker, but do you recommend people who they should go to, or a good plan for them in that regard?
We don't make recommendations. We help our customers source and vet cybersecurity insurance. It is valuable in certain circumstances, but not all the time because of the exclusions. Like some cybersecurity brokers sell insurance that excludes coverage in the instance of a socially engineered attack. Well, phishing is the primary attack vector of most businesses, and therefore a lot of insurance won't pay out for businesses that are breached or have damage due to phishing attacks. So it's a very new, interesting, world, and insurance is one of them. They're trying to figure it out too. So what we do is we sit down with our customers and review the insurance before they purchase it. That's part of our job. So we make sure that the insurance that they're buying is something that will help them deal with cybersecurity in an effective manner and will protect them and will pay out if they need to, leverage the insurance.
Excellent. Now, as you wrap up our show, David, just a few final questions here. Now we'll just talk about the cyber threat landscape in general. How do you see the threat landscape changing in the coming years? Obviously, COVID-19 has made a huge impact. That's dramatically changed the picture. One of the conversations I usually have with some guests and some of my clients is that, this work from home thing was something that many IT people thought would take 3 or 4 years to happen. Now we're seeing that it actually happened within a month and a half. How do you foresee the threat landscape changing, and what do you think the biggest cyber threat's going to be?
I think the threat landscape, it's just going to get more and more advanced. The bad guys are more motivated and have more desire and more money, or the ability to make money. So they're going to continue to innovate. So you'll see continual innovation in the attacks, the types of attacks, how good they get, and you'll continue to see countermeasures that deal with the bad guys' innovations and changing of tactics. The biggest threat will be attacks on critical infrastructure, and will come from nation-state actors that want to do evil to the United States or their enemies. But, you know, my biggest fear is that one day the lights won't come on and the New York Stock Exchange won't open, or instead of flying planes in the building, they figure out a way to cause a nuclear reactor to melt down, or a petrochemical plant in South Texas blow up, or liquefied natural gas plant in the coast of Louisiana to blow up, something along those lines. That's my biggest concern.
Right. Well, yeah, that's something I've been writing about in my blogs too, is that, you know, critical infrastructure is such a neglected area. And I think one time I even posted an article on my cybersecurity forum on LinkedIn that, you know, hey, if the United States is having such a hard time handling, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic with the security issues, how are we going to cope up with a large scale, you know, disaster when it comes to critical infrastructure, where the gas is shut down, there are no lights, there's no water for weeks on end, food supplies disrupted. I mean, it's a very real threat. It's very scary. But finally, David,
it'll happen.
Go ahead. Yeah,
no,
go ahead.
I just said you're correct.
Finally, you're
right. Attacks on.
Yeah, it's not, as you said, it's not going to be, you know, airplanes crashing into the World Trade Center again. It's going to be something that just, but one day we wake up and the whole world will change back in the Stone Age era. But finally, as we wrap up our show, now we all are at risk. We are all at risk of being a victim of cyber attack. There's nothing as 100% bulletproofness. We can only mitigate that risk. So do you have like a laundry list that you tell clients, your family, friends, what have you, colleagues, what they can do to protect themselves and mitigate the risk of being a victim of a cyber attack?
The only two things I tell people to do are, number one, is buy as much with a credit card as possible. Don't use a cash card. And buy it using a high-end credit card, preferably an American Express or a credit card company that American Express is the best because they're so client-focused on the individual, because they make the majority of their money off the processing from the vendors that charge. So American Express is the best, because if you get frauded, they're going to take care of you. And then secondarily, I only have one online enabled bank account, and that's my Charles Schwab account. And I only put a few thousand dollars in it and pay my regular bills with it. I actually walk into a bank, my bankers actually know my name. I have three separate banks, and they all know my name because I walk in there. I do not use, you know, apps from banks. I don't fill out applications from the bank. I do everything in person. And I only keep the amount of cash in my online account that I'm comfortable with, that I could lose and not be worried about it. I know some people that keep a couple hundred thousand dollars an online-enabled account. So if I lost a couple hundred thousand dollars, I would be extremely distressed. So I don't keep large amounts of cash in online-enabled accounts. So those are the two pieces of advice I give my friends. And then I cancel my credit cards all the time and have them reissue new numbers all the time.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I'm not a big technology. I mean, we're in cyber. I'm not a huge technology guy myself, too, and like using, like, even latest and greatest iPhone. My iPhone's still like, I don't know, 5 years old, 6 years old. I think the only mobile app I have is for my email. That's all I have. I don't like mobile apps whatsoever, because that's another security threat down the road, too, especially if you download stuff from Google Play, I think. because they don't vet the apps that are being uploaded by the software developers. But I know that Apple on their iOS platform, they really put them through some very stringent security requirements. So that's very interesting that you would say that. So cool. Well, David, thank you for being on the show this morning with us. It was a very insightful show. And I think it's the first podcast I've had. No, I think the second one I've had with a guest or a client actually in, from Texas. I really enjoyed your perspective from the land down south. The Lone Star State, I should say, right?
Lone Star State. You are correct. Well, I appreciate it. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Take care, David. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.